Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
Coming up on Hometown Alaska, host Dave Waldron is joined by me, producer Ammon Swenson, for our Halloween extravaganza episode. We'll go back through some of our favorite on-air spooky moments from the past, including horror movie suggestions, readings, radio dramas, and we'll discuss some of our favorite things about the season. And we'll wrap all of that up with the conclusion to Alaska Public Media's Dracula. That's all coming up next on Hometown Alaska from Alaska, Alaska Public Media.
Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and it's the end of October, so you know what that means. It's time for our annual Halloween show. And this year, I'm joined by producer Ammon Swenson, who does a lot of the behind-the-scenes work for this program, including this very festive music we're enjoying right now, and this wonderful campfire ambiance. Ammon, happy Halloween to you.
Happy Halloween, Dave.
Thanks for coming in. It's nice to have you actually in the studio and not behind the board for once.
It's nice to be in here for once.
Yeah, we just got to promise not to burn the place down with this fire.
Yeah, exactly. Keep it stoked, but not too crazy.
That's right. Just enough to set the mood. So on today's show, we're going to be playing some of our favorite Halloween segments we've worked on over the years at Alaska Public Media. And we have it all for you today. We have spooky radio plays. We have Halloween movie favorites. We have an interview and a book reading from a local horror author. And lastly, we get to hear that finale of Alaska Public Media's Dracula, a rendition of the classic tale we've been airing all month on Hometown Alaska. And Ammon, you not only worked behind the scenes on that, you are a pretty major character on that production, right?
Yeah, correct. I play Jonathan Harker. He is the guy who initially goes to sell Count Dracula or finalize his real estate deal. And this play takes place in Anchorage, so Dracula's coming here, man.
Yeah, and if you've seen Bram Stoker's Dracula from the 90s, you're Keanu Reeves. You know, that's the easy way for people to remember it.
Yeah, but
you're basically Keanu.
No atrocious English accent. I just speak in my normal voice.
That's right. I like it that way. Well, I've been loving it so far. I love that we have a Halloween play running through the month of October here. And we're going to get things started off here. Up first, we have a radio play. This first aired in 2024. The performance was done live in the studio by a local theater company, Midnight Ensemble. And the play is called Imaginary Friends. It's written by Jeffrey James Keyes. And as the title implies, it's about imaginary friends. So three separate people recall their childhoods and what it was like to grow up with friends that weren't exactly all there. And just a warning for listeners, the play is moderately scary. What do you think, like 1 out of 10, I'd say like a 6, Ammon, 5?
Yeah, use some discretion, but I don't think it's gonna be too bad.
No, and there is a little bit of adult language in there as well. So please enjoy this production of Imaginary Friends.
Did you ever have an imaginary friend when you were a kid?
Coco and Charles. Coco was a petite Asian woman. She had a heavy accent, said she was born just outside of Saigon. Charles was an overweight Native American man with dreads down past his ass. Coco and Charles used to hang out in my room when I was 6 years old. They taught me how to play poker by the illumination of my childhood light bright while my parents were asleep.
Dr. Tom was a pretty intense orthopedic surgeon. He came on my 5th birthday and stayed until I was 6. Every night when the lights went out, he'd show up and unroll elaborate pictures of the human body and give me lectures on anatomy and physiology. I was inquisitive at first, but this pissed him off. He was always firm with me. Told me if I got too loud or had too many questions or didn't remember what he taught the night before, He would make it so I wouldn't wake up. You know, most toddlers can't even tie their shoes, and here I was, every night, learning the skeletal, integumentary, muscular, nervous, sensory, endocrine, cardiovascular, lymphatic, respiratory, digestive, urinary, and reproductive systems. And this was just the first semester, he'd always say.
Mine came to me in the daytime. I grew up in the Midwest in the 80s when parents used to let their kids climb trees, swim in rivers, chase fireflies, get stung by bees, and go insane in the wilderness. There was a huge forest just behind my mom's house where I'd pick wildflowers when I was a little girl. One day, I met Meredith, who'd said she was six, just like me. Meredith had freckles and strawberry blonde hair and looked like a real-life strawberry shortcake.
Coco wore a beret, and she and Charles used to chain smoke. Charles smoked Camels, and Coco swore by clove cigarettes out of a long cigarette holder. She told me she was a modern-day Zelda Fitzgerald and could always keep up with the boys.
Dr. Tom taught me about anatomical organization. If I didn't remember the definition of a term verbatim, he threatened to execute my mom and dad. Well, that's what he'd always say.
Meredith and I would count spots on ladybugs, hunt for four-leaf clovers, and chase butterflies.
Most children learn about their bodies by singing head, shoulders, knees and toes, knees and toes. I was busy sweating over the difference between the sciatic, femoral, and lumbar nerves.
Charles and Coco wanted to train me to be the greatest poker player in the whole world. They gave me the history of the greatest poker players. Stu Unger, Chip Reese, Johnny Moss, and Doyle Brunson, the godfather of poker. Coco decided I was destined to become greater than any of these men. It was time a woman showed these boys how it was done.
My dad was out of the picture, and my mom was a workaholic back in those days. We had a little help from the state, but she worked long hours, and I was pretty much on my own every summer.
Mom and dad were really involved with my upbringing. They watched me like a hawk, making sure I became the perfect little girl they'd always dreamed of having.
My parents didn't understand why I looked like I'd been hit by a bus every morning. I was the only kid they knew that enjoyed taking naps.
She became curious whenever I brought up Meredith at the dinner table. What do her parents do? Had I been over her house?
Normal girls play with dolls and stuffed animals. I was obsessed with cards. Mom and Dad didn't understand this. The Barbie dream house I got for Christmas was covered in dust. My little ponies tucked neatly into shoeboxes for safekeeping. Cabbage patch dolls all lined up on the windowsill.
One night, I didn't remember exactly where the tensor fascia lata muscle was, and I thought Dr. Tom was going to give me a lobotomy.
When I asked Meredith where she lived, she ignored me at first. But then I became persistent and told her my mom wanted to meet her. And she looked down, and when she looked up, her eyes were dark. And she told me to drop it. Why couldn't we just have fun and play without bringing our parents into it? Especially since my mom cared more about working than taking care of me. She said she was sent to play with me because my mom wasn't there to look after me. This didn't make sense. I told her she hurt my feelings. The second I said that, she reached out her arms and pushed me. But instead of falling down, it was as if someone picked me up and flung me across the field. I looked down and my legs and arms were all scraped up, and I turned around and I started running, and I cried all the way home.
Coco and Charles started pushing and pushing me, drilling me on strategy and how I could be more careful with my body language and physical awareness. They'd go over everything I ate each day. They wanted me to grow into a bombshell so I could walk into any casino and trick people into giving me what I deserve.
My parents took me to a sleep specialist because they didn't understand why I was taking so many naps.
When I got home, my mom was getting back from work, and I jumped into her arms and told her what happened. She looked down, and when she saw my cuts and scrapes, she almost lost her mind. She forbid me from leaving the house and going to see Meredith.
One night, in the middle of our card game, my mom barged in my room. The second the light went on, Coco and Charles vanished. My mom wanted to know why I was awake and sitting at the table with my cards when I was supposed to be asleep. Her nostrils flared up. Was I smoking?
The specialist gave my parents instructions to monitor me while I slept.
I was relieved when I saw it was raining the next morning. I knew Meredith would be angry for not meeting her to play, but the rain was a better excuse than my mom forbidding me from going outside.
Mom found Coco's pack of cloves on the Candyland table and didn't understand where I got them.
I started to freak out as they sat next to me that night. What would happen when Dr. Tom showed up and saw them sitting there?
Even though it was daytime, the house was dark because of the rain. I was in the basement when I heard a knock at the door. My mom instructed me to never open the door for strangers, but whoever was at the door kept knocking.
I told her that Coco had left them.
They sat there all night.
Who's Coco?
I tossed and turned, pretending to be asleep. Sweetie, my mom asked, what's wrong? He's going to be mad at me. He's going to give me a lobotomy if I don't pay attention. Who? My mom wanted to know.
Who are you talking about?
Dr. Tom.
Coco. Charles, my friends.
Meredith. It was Meredith at the door. I knew it was. The knocking kept going. Knock, knock, knock. And then I'd wait and hear nothing but rain.
I started telling Mom about Coco and Charles, how they had
every night. I told her about the latissimus dorsi and how it inserted into the humerus and where it connected to the vertebral column, and how mad he was going to be if I didn't ace my pop quiz this evening, and how I was scared of getting a lobotomy.
I couldn't focus on anything but the knocking at the door. I climbed the stairs from the basement, and with each step, the knocking grew louder.
Mom shook her head. How dare I lie to her? Where did the cigarettes come from? Did I steal them? How long had I been smoking?
Clearly, I had an overactive imagination.
But how could I have made up these people?
But how the hell did I come up with Dr. Tom?
How did I come up with Coco
and
Charles?
How did I know so much
about Saigon? And who taught me so much about playing poker?
By the time I got to the steps, I was out of breath. I put one hand to the door and felt the vibration of the knocks. I knew who was on the other side.
Mom held me in her lap.
Mom couldn't believe what she was hearing.
My mom told me not to open the door for anyone.
I didn't know if I should tell her everything, but I did.
I told Mom everything that night.
I knew if it was her that I should let her in. She'd probably want to apologize for being mean that day.
She said that kids sometimes have imaginary friends.
And that these imaginary friends are dreams and ideas, compositions of things we overhear throughout our day, and that it's our minds playing tricks on us.
I didn't buy it. I knew Coco and Charles were really there.
I reached out to the doorknob and undid the lock. The knocking stopped and I took a big gulp as I turned the knob to the right.
They told me I'm going to be the greatest poker player in the whole wide world.
He told me he's going to give me a lobotomy if I miss a lecture, even once.
When I opened the door, I expected to see Meredith, but instead, there was no one there.
Mom cracked open a window and then climbed into bed with me that night.
My mom told me I would be okay, that she would make sure nobody would give me a lobotomy or punish me for not paying attention when I should be sleeping.
I went outside, and when I stepped into the yard, I felt the cold rain on the back of my neck.
Coco and Charles never came back to visit me.
I didn't have another proper anatomy lesson until high school.
I looked up into the sky and watched as droplets soared around me. The next day, I went to the forest to pick wildflowers, but Meredith wasn't there. I went again and again, but she was nowhere to be found. Later in life, I decided Meredith was probably an imaginary friend. More often than not, imaginary friends are
harmless products of overactive imaginations in childhood.
At least that's what I told myself.
But what if maybe, just maybe there's more to them? They seem so tangible. What if children have that special sixth sense? If they're capable of seeing and relating to actual ghosts, wouldn't that be something?
That was the play Imaginary Friends, written by Jeffrey James Keyes and performed by a local theater company here, Midnight Ensemble. Ammon, did you have an imaginary friend growing up?
You know, I don't necessarily know about like some kind of imaginary friend that I just concocted out of nothing, but I'd say the closest thing is a little kid roaming the woods of the hillside Anchorage as a child, unsupervised. I think the closest thing to an imaginary friend would be pretending that I was out adventuring with Indiana Jones and he was my companion in adventure.
Oh, wow. I love that. What a great companion to have.
He was a great companion.
Did you eat any monkey brains in your adventures?
No, that was never... The food of Indiana Jones was never too appealing for me. I was kind of... I was a big fan of the fighting Nazis and helping those in need.
Right, and running from giant boulders, of course.
Always got to run from a giant boulder.
Well, Ammon, one of my favorite things about the Halloween season is watching scary movies. I love it. Scary shows, scary movies. This next piece comes from AK, a series that we used to run every Friday on Alaska News Nightly. And for it, I sat down with a local filmmaker and asked him for his go-to movies to watch on Halloween. There's nothing like a great scary movie. They're unique, exhilarating, and often get seared into your memory. I still get freaked out 13 years later when I think of the movie Ju-on, or as the American remake was called, The Grudge. There's these ghosts and they make this awful sound. If you've ever seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. I will not be watching this one again, but I am always looking for a good Halloween movie. I'm no film expert, though. Luckily, I work just down the hall from one.
My name is John Norris. I am a video producer here at Alaska Public Media, but I also, in my free time, make short films and fun videos, and I run the 48-hour film challenge here in Anchorage.
So are you a fan of scary movies?
I'm a huge fan of scary movies. It's kind of the only type of movie where it's fine if things don't make sense. Like, nobody questions it too much. If somebody runs upstairs when they could clearly just run out of the house, because everyone agrees that the movie would be over if everybody made good decisions.
Right. So let's talk about your favorite Halloween movies of all time. And we'll start with the obvious category. What movie freaks you out the most?
This movie called The Descent that came out in like 2005, maybe. It's about a group of women who are spelunkers. So they're spelunking and they get lost in this cave system, and it's really creepy and scary because it's just dark and claustrophobic the entire time.
Ah, please! Is there anybody there? Hello?
How about the most original horror movie you've ever seen?
Peter Jackson, the director of Lord of the Rings. Before he made Lord of the Rings, he made like a series of like kind of low budget horror movies. And one of them is called Brain Dead, where this New Zealander's mother gets bitten by a Sumatran rat monkey. And she gets an infection. It turns her into like a zombie.
They're not dead exactly. They're just sort of rotting.
Father Magruder? Your mother!
It is the most insanely gory but funny movie ever. Highly recommended.
Not everyone is a fan of scary movies. So what's your recommendation for someone who wants the Halloween theme movie but is more comedy and less terror?
I mean, you can't go wrong with Young Frankenstein. That's like one of my favorite movies of all time. I mean, it's got everything. It's got Gene Wilder. It's got Putting on the Ritz. Yeah, I think that's my pick. That's like really all you need for Halloween.
Would you mind telling me whose brain I did put in?
And you won't be angry?
I will not be angry.
Gene Wilder is just the most incredible actor of all time. Just incredibly deadpan. And I wish I could be Gene Wilder in most situations in my life.
Are you saying that I put an abnormal brain into a 7.5 foot long, 54 inch wide gorilla?
Okay, so you've watched a lot of local films and you've judged quite a bit of them as well. How about the best Alaskan made scare flick?
I think Moose the Movie is about a small Alaskan town menaced by a moosetar, which is like a minotaur, but more Alaskan. So if you can find Moose the Movie, it's really funny. I mean, surprisingly well made for the resources they had. And I know a lot of people have put a lot of work into it, and it turned out really well.
Okay, let me see if I get this whole thing right. A moose dressed like a hobo came in here and ripped everybody apart.
Moosetor!
Uh-huh. So have you ever made a horror film yourself?
I've made some like horror short films. I made a short film about a stand-up comedian who gets heckled and then murders all of her hecklers.
Because you're a stand-up comic, right?
I do that sometimes too.
Yeah, so this is, you're channeling some aggression there maybe.
Absolutely. It's a good release. Not a great film, but it was really fun to shoot. And making horror movies is probably like the most fun thing to do because you get to mess around with like fake blood.
Ammon, what are some of your favorite things to watch around Halloween?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a mixed bag, and maybe it's, you know, changed over the years. I feel like recently the kind of like A24 type, maybe more cerebral horror stuff.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Robert Eggers type stuff, The Witch, yep. The Lighthouse. I enjoyed Nosferatu, which was super weird and crazy, but a fun take.
Yes, I think that is a good modern vampire movie to check out.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure.
None of this sparkling like diamonds in the sunlight.
How dare you insult Twilight?
I think Twilight. It's having a renaissance or something, I've heard. I don't know.
They're re-airing it at the Beartooth, actually. Oh, okay. You know, they've been playing the Twilight movies.
All right, well... Yeah.
There's still a fan base for it.
I will probably not be there.
Sounds like it.
But yeah, I mean, other than that, I gotta say, I think if we're looking for kind of like fun horror movies, I think the best times that I've had in a theater and seeing horror movies, probably Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, great movie.
That one is just kind of everything you love about horror, but kind of played up. Comedic, but also just like a really unique concept. I don't know if you're Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell was an incredibly fun movie for me.
Yeah, that's
just
a good one.
Wackiness, crazy off-the-wall stuff.
Well, I love all John's recommendations there. I watch Young Frankenstein every Halloween, but also that the Brain Dead movie is quite good. The one done by Peter Jackson, so hard to think of him as anything but the Lord of the Rings guy, but
yeah, wholesome, magical.
Weird movies, though. He made a couple of really weird movies. Brain Dead was one, but you said you saw his other one, right?
Yeah, it's kind of become a cult classic, at least with me and my brothers. Dead Alive.
Yes.
Kind of maybe a pseudo zombie type movie, but not really. Mm-hmm. And I believe they might have set the record for the amount of fake blood used. Let's just say there's a climax with a lawnmower and yeah.
It's a very memorable scene.
Yes,
if you've
indeed.
Seen it. Yeah. So I mean, I would say if people are a fan of, speaking of Sam Raimi, you know, Evil Dead or Army of Darkness.
Over the top stuff.
Really
maybe.
Campy but overly gory movie if you're into that kind of thing. All right, Ammon. So for our last segment before we dive into the final episode of Alaska Public Media's Dracula, we're going to revisit an interview from 2023. I spoke with a local horror author Jessica Faust, who had just finished her book at the time. It's titled Somebody. It was a really fun conversation because she spoke about this idea she came up with for a book that looks like a children's book, but when you open it up, it's not. So it was actually a pretty creepy book. And at the end of the interview, she does a reading of it. So we added some creepy soundscape to it, and it turned out really good, I thought. And I asked her right off the bat if she had always been a fan of Halloween.
Yes, always been into spooky season, always been into Halloween. I really love how everyone kind of gets down with the assignment around Halloween. Everyone kind of gets on board to just be a little weirder, be a little scarier. I love the community aspect of all holidays, but coming together to just get weird and scary is, I love it.
Well, that's what we're here for.
Yeah.
On your website, you have, of course, your books for sale, but you also have this series of calendars called I Think This Place Is Haunted. Tell us how that series happened.
Yeah, so I Think This Place Is Haunted. It started 2 years ago, and that was a series of different rooms within the same haunted house. And they're all decorated really kind of beautifully in this mid-century style, but then they all have something kind of upsetting going on there. And then last year I switched to landscapes. So I really wanted to sort of, I guess, bring the season to the entire year around and find some way to connect to each time of year, but find that kind of creepy aspect there.
That's right. We have Christmas in July. We need Halloween in July, too.
Right.
Well, tell us how you started writing horror stories.
Yeah. So I really wasn't doing too much illustrating or art. I mean, I've always enjoyed art, but it was definitely like a lot of people lockdown that kind of got me back into it. And it actually was one of those October art challenges. I started one called Drawloween. So they give you a prompt every day for like a spooky drawing. And I did one every day for 31 days. And that got me back into a really serious habit of illustrating. And a few months later, I went out for illustrating a few Aleutic legends. I submitted for the Aleutic Museum down in Kodiak. They were calling for artists to illustrate some legends. And so I ended up getting the honor of being able to illustrate one called The Girl Who Married a Star. And that's a really kind of a creepy story, right? There's this very mysterious man with one eye that a girl marries, and then he takes her up into the sky. And so I drew three illustrations for that story. And that was when I started thinking about this idea of something that sort of looked and felt like a children's book with big full-scale illustrations, maybe minimal words, you know, on each page, 1 to 2 sentences, but had this sort of haunting element to it. Movies like The Babadook definitely like informed my style. Even Maurice Sendak and Where the Wild Things Are and things like that, but just a little bit more sinister.
Nice. Yeah, I was going to say your books definitely have that art style and layout of a children's book, but the content and the pictures are kind of creepy. So what made you choose that contrast of like, this could be a kid's book, and then they open like, oh, wait, maybe not.
Yeah, I kind of like the dupe of it. I like that you might be, I mean, obviously I don't want to like scare little kids, but I like that you might be a little bit thrown off by the fact that you're expecting something really calm and comforting, and then it has a more chilling element to it.
Sure. Nothing graphic, though. Just make that clear to our listeners.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any blood or anything. Or is there?
There's a tiny bit of blood in the one I'm about to read, but it's not too bad.
Okay. So before we get to the reading of your book, tell us a little bit about it. Where did you get the idea for Somebody?
Yeah. So the setting was definitely inspired by the woods of Appalachia, but it's a kind of a fantastical representation. It's a story of a witch of the woods. And so that's sort of an exploration of like a person or a woman who's like outside of the norms of society. And so I think horror when it's at its best is subverting your expectations and subverting what you expect to be good in society. So in some ways, I think witches are very punk rock in that way, in that they're rejecting sort of beauty and youth and domesticity and, you know, and they're also evil and terrible, but there is sort of a feminist thing there.
What is the age recommendation for your books?
I don't know if I have the answer to that, but there's nothing that I'll be reading that's inappropriate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was teaching middle school, they could definitely handle it, but a little bit, maybe not much younger than that.
Oh, wow. Middle school. What did your students think about their teacher being an author of horror books?
Well, I'll never know everything that they thought of me, but no, I think they got really into it. I had a few students who also were really interested in art and illustration and graphic novels and things like that. So I had a few students who would come by at lunch and show me some of their drafts every day and things like that. So it was a great way to connect. I taught science, so it was a completely different side of me that they kind of got to know as well.
All right, so let's set the scene for your book. What kind of audio elements would you like? Think of us as your audio waiter. Do we need like water? Do we need birds?
Okay, I think we need like rustling in the trees.
All right.
Some wind and rustling, I'd say.
Wind and rustling, we can do that.
Somebody by Jessica Faust. They say there's somebody in the woods round here. Used to live in town, but she ran off as a little one. Had some trouble with wicked little boys that chased her into the shadows. Some folks say she went up the hill at sundown to curse at the Lord. And when she shot through a handkerchief, it poured out her blood. Her body swelled and extended till she was vast and deep. Now she hides in the trees like an insect. And she can take the form of a woman if she means to. Little girls say they see her out picking flowers. My grandmother thought she saw her nursing wolves at her breast by the stream. And when chickens and goats turn up dead, everyone knows who got to them. Never liked going out there myself. Can feel her breathing in the branches. And her blood rushing round and round. Reckon I'll have to go looking tonight, though. My little girl should be home by now. Have you seen her? The end.
Jessica Faust is the author and illustrator for her short horror stories, Come Into the Water and Somebody. Jessica, thanks for coming in and helping us get in the Halloween spirit.
Thanks for having me. Happy Halloween.
You too. Well, Ammon, I don't know about you, but I do have a few goosebumps after that one. That one always gives me goosebumps. Are you fully in the Halloween spirit now?
I'd say so. I think that just has that kind of perfect creepy vibe, maybe not just overt terror or whatever. And what's cool about Jessica, she's kind of a Renaissance woman. I know that she had been releasing like Halloween calendars. She's an actress, writer, artist, kind of does it all. And she's into the spooky stuff.
She loves it.
Which is pretty cool.
She's also literally a Renaissance person because I see her every year at the Renaissance Fair.
Yes, that too.
Yeah, we got to get Jessica back on the show. Jessica, if you're listening, we're getting you back on the show. Well, Ammon, thanks for coming in, keeping me company around the fire tonight. I hope you have a perfectly scary Halloween this year, no matter what you're doing, whether it's watching scary movies or listening to poems or being, you know, Jonathan, you know, as we know you are.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dave. It's always fun to do these with you.
I agree. Well, stay with us because right after the break, we'll be playing the finale of Alaska Public Media's Dracula, which has been airing all month on the program. I'm Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
Hometown Alaska presents the fourth and final episode of Alaska Public Media's Dracula, a modernized take on the original work by Bram Stoker, adapted for the radio by Crystal Hyde. The following audio drama contains content that may be frightening or disturbing, including a gunshot. Listener discretion is advised. This segment of Hometown Alaska will last for the next 18 minutes.
One final correspondence between Van Helsing's hunting party and Mina's caretakers.
Hello?
This is Seward, checking in. You're almost there? Mina senses the plane.
10 o'clock. Abandoned snowboard. Valley.
60 degrees to your right? Look for an abandoned snowboard in a valley. Dracula should be around there somewhere.
There it is. I see it.
Miss Homewood sees it. We will be starting our descent momentarily. Ati, you have the revolver?
Fully loaded.
Wunderbar, Miss Homewood. Pack it all up and get your skis ready.
Mr. Van Helsing?
Hold on. Mina wants to say something.
Of course, Mrs. Murray.
Tell Jonathan to be careful, to not act on his anger. And tell him that I love him so.
I will, Miss Murray. I will. Now, the time has come. The next time I call, it will be finished.
Good. Talk to you then.
So they still don't know we left Jonathan in hiding back at Mina's place?
Indeed.
I guess it makes sense. Dr. Seward doesn't trust you, so you don't trust her back.
Jacqueline has a good heart, but it is easily corrupted. She lacks the faith necessary for this crusade. Jonathan will ensure that if the worst comes to pass, Mina's soul will be safe.
Do you think he'd do it if it came to that? Mina's his fiancé. He wouldn't kill her if she turned, would he?
All we can do is pray that it doesn't come to that. Pray that you are right, that Mina can be turned back by killing her awful, fiendish vampire mother. Now it's time. Let us do our part. Let us hunt.
As Homewood and Van Helsing make their descent, Quinn and Jackie do their best to keep Mina comfortable, unaware of the trap Van Helsing has set.
Good Lord, all this garlic smells something fierce. How's she doing?
Not good. She's so pale, and her teeth have already turned.
I'm okay.
How's a guy like Van Helsing even get a university job to begin with? I can't believe he used to teach, let alone teach you.
I don't know. He's a crank, but I've seen a lot of weird things in the past couple of days. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt on this whole vampire thing, but Luke. Artie swears otherwise, but Luke was himself. He was a vampire, to be sure, but it was the Luke we knew. He was compassionate, he was energetic, he comforted Artie, and he only died because Van Helsing put a bullet in him. Vampire Luke was still Luke. What does dead or undead even mean if we can still talk to him or be with him? If he can still try to comfort the woman he loved? If he can still advocate for himself? He was still the person he was before he grew those fangs.
She's here.
What?
Mina, what are you doing? Why are you opening the window? She's getting in.
Wait.
Dracula's not attacking.
Are you here to attack, or are you here to talk?
Whoa, she's transforming again.
here to talk. I have a feeling you three are more amenable than Jonathan or the professor.
For the longest time, the air in Mina's home is tense and still, as an animal in fear. Until, at last...
Fine. We'll talk. You have a lot to answer for.
Thank you for your hospitality.
We thought you were off in the mountains. Mina's been feeding us directions. She has some kind of psychic bond with you. Or at least that's Van Helsing's theory.
A bad dream I hypnotically implanted, based on a location I scouted a few days ago. I had my doubts it would convince the professor, but I suppose he's gullible enough to believe anything. And now I don't have to deal with him.
And the garlic's not doing anything?
No, why would you think it would?
I suppose garlic's just another superstition. Next question.
In due time, I have a question for Mina.
What?
My sweet child, how are you feeling?
I feel weak. I need...
She might need a blood transfusion. I should have thought of that. I can run to my office and get my gear.
You don't need gear.
What do you... Oh. Oh, no. She hasn't turned yet. Has she?
Roll up your sleeve, Jackie. I don't think I'll kill you.
Ah. Luke's hypnosis made this a lot less painful last time.
Okay, that's enough, I think. You okay, Jackie?
Woozy. I'm gonna get a snack.
So, that settles it. I'm a vampire.
Yes.
But if we kill you, then...
No. No matter what happens to me, Mina, you will always be a vampire from now until the day you finally pass on.
So... Van Helsing and Artie were also wrong about that?
No. No, no, no. I don't like this.
Mina.
No. I don't want to be a vampire. I don't want to live forever or drink people's blood or avoid sunshine the rest of my life.
Why would you have to avoid sunshine?
Because...
Sounds like another misconception. I'll also hazard a guess that those silver bullets won't have any effect either.
Well, no matter what you shoot with a silver bullet, it probably won't survive.
No. There has to be another way to reverse this, right?
I'm afraid there's not. If there was, I would know.
You monster!
Mina, precious child.
Don't call me that. I'm not your...
Mina, here, hug me.
Mina... I know it's easy to grieve what you were. There are aspects of my humanity that I miss. I was upset when my vampire turned me all those centuries ago. For decades, I saw myself as a demon. But time passed, as it always does. And as all the kings and churches and laws that convinced me I was a demon aged into nothingness, all that was left was me. One cannot truly live being convinced that they are an unsalvageable monstrosity. So I fed and hunted and destroyed anything that could persuade people like me that they were unclean or unworthy or inhuman. In time, Mina, you will embrace yourself again.
You became a creature of vengeance.
I became a creature of justice. Scores of women and children lived happy and free after I liberated them.
After you killed their kings.
Indeed.
You don't get it. I don't want to be a killer. I don't want to be a violent creature at all. All I want is...
What do you want, child?
I don't know, but I don't want this.
No, Mina. I'm not asking what you don't want. You have power now. What is it you do want?
I don't want power. I don't want to be corrupted by it. Then I'll be a killer like you.
Power doesn't corrupt, my dear. Power simply reveals. Power is the arbiter of our deepest desires. When one becomes all-powerful,
We learn what their truest, deepest intentions are. Power revealed to the world that I would not stand for the abuse of the marginalized. Power has now been thrust upon you. What will your power reveal? What do you want?
Freedom, Mina.
No. No, you don't.
Mina, you've been talking about this with me for—
Shut up, Jackie!
Mina, I think you should just say it. It's okay.
I need to be free from Jonathan. That's why you turned me, isn't it?
It was plain from the moment he told me about you.
You came all the way to Anchorage to rescue me?
No, I simply wanted to live somewhere more populated. But Jonathan did provide me with a convenient first task.
Second task? You turned Luke beforehand. He might still be alive if you hadn't.
That's not...
Not what? Fair? Luke didn't ask for this. Luke wasn't dating a possessive abuser. Luke was driving, minding his own business, when you crashed headlong into him and fed on him. Right?
He gave me such a desperate look in his eyes as I fed on him. I knew in that moment that to save him, I needed to turn him.
But neither of us asked for this. You judged for yourself what needed to be done, and you acted without our consent. I would have gotten away from Jonathan on my own terms.
Would you have?
Of course, I...
Mina, my child, look deep into your heart and ask yourself how long you would have stayed with Jonathan without my intervention.
She's right, Mina. You had grievances with Jonathan, but you were still rosy about him. A lot of victims are. If Jonathan's agency sent someone else, you probably would have stayed with him a lot longer. Jackie and I wouldn't have liked it, but probably wouldn't have acted.
Indeed, liberation requires initiative, and I gave it to you as I have to others over the histories.
But Mina's right, too. Neither Luke nor Mina asked for this, and Luke deserved a better fate than what we saw. If it were me in Mina's position and you turned me into a vampire against my will, well, I wouldn't be too happy about that neither.
And yet you would be free. You do not understand. I have lived hundreds of years before any of you were born. I have seen countless people abused and murdered at the command of vindictive, selfish men. I have watched entire faiths warped to oppress large swaths of the human race. I could not have fought to protect the unprotected if not for my vampirehood.
Who's there?
I know that voice. You're working with that monster.
Ah! No!
Jonathan? Oh no, she's bleeding. Dracula, are you okay?
It seems my reign has come to an end.
Dracula.
Mina. Do not forget the power that you hold. You've always held it. You have more courage than you know.
She's dead.
So I did hit her. I didn't think I could do that through the door.
You didn't go with Van Helsing like we planned.
You lied to us.
I had to. You're not trustworthy around these things. But Mina, I'm just glad you're safe.
John, stay back.
What?
I said, stay back.
No, so it's true.
Jonathan!
You're already a vampire, aren't you?
I am, but...
I've been here for you this whole time. I've loved you. I've been your wall, your rock. And now you're ready to throw me away for whatever Dracula's done to you.
Jonathan, don't!
But it doesn't matter now. The Mina I love is already gone, isn't she? You're an empty shell. So now it's up to me to free your soul once and for all.
Jonathan! Freeze!
You're going to put the gun down and walk away. You will believe that I died when you killed Dracula. You will call Van Helsing and Artie and tell them that the deed is done and that there was nothing you could do to save me. And once you have done all that, you will live your life knowing that in my last moments, I truly did love you.
Van Helsing, Dracula ambushed us at the apartment.
I killed her, but Mina didn't make it.
A pause before the denouement as the friends gather their thoughts.
What happens now?
We bury the Countess, and I run before the others find me.
I'm coming with you.
No.
Yes, please. For me.
Quinn?
I'll stick around and give them the bad news. Please keep in touch.
I will.
The morning dawns and the Countess's torch is passed. The sun rises and sets in its eternal dance. A year passes from the Countess's death, and her final child writes a letter after settling into her new life.
Dear Quinn, thank you for continuing to write to me. I know snail mail is inconvenient. I'm working on getting a new identity established so I can get connected to a phone again. As of writing this, it's been 1 year since Dracula turned me into a vampire. I like to think I've adapted well to it. I've gotten this far without killing anyone, and Jackie offers me a vein every time she visits. She visits regularly, in fact, making the monthly trip all the way to Kotzebue to do check-ins and research. How she manages the money to do it every month is beyond me, but it's often enough that I don't need to worry about feeding on anyone here. I think regularly of Dracula's parting words, though, in those dark moments when residents go missing or suffer domestic assault or worse. How many of these people see themselves as inferior or lesser, just as I did with Jonathan? And what would my powers reveal about me if I gave in to them? How would this community see me if I saved these people the way Dracula would have? I am genuinely afraid of the answer. Now that I have supernatural powers, I also bear the responsibility of judging right from wrong. It's a responsibility that, in the end of her life, Dracula wielded without fear. I am terrified by it. But I wonder if she was too in her earliest years. I also think so often of Jonathan. I don't know where he is. I don't want to. But a part of me still lives with him, I think. There's still an emptiness in me where he used to be. That emptiness is better than what occupied this space, but it still leaves me feeling hollow. But even with those hollow feelings, I feel free. I have the room to grow again. Jackie's noticed this about me. Even with the paler skin and the fangs, I feel sunnier and lighter somehow. Life as a vampire is not terribly different from life as a human. All that's changed is that I drink Dr. Seward's blood instead of eating. Maria, Dracula's servant from Transylvania, has also reached out. She's distraught about the death of her countess. I wish I could console her. I don't know how Jackie and I are going to scrounge up the money to fly to Europe, especially when I'm paying so much for Jackie's meals up here in Kotzebue. But I want to make it work. You always wanted to go to Europe, right? You should come with us. I'm okay. I'm still figuring out how to fit into this world as a vampire. I don't know if I ever will, but I'm glad I have you and Jackie by my side to support me until the end. With deepest love, Mina Murray.
This concludes Alaska Public Media's Dracula. Part 4 featured Wesley Early as the narrator, Mary Lou Asiksik as Mina Murray, Ammon Swenson as Jonathan Harker, Madeline Rose as Dr. Jacqueline Seward, Amanda Agnelli as Quinn Morris, Kim Sherry as Artie Holmwood, Jeremy Shea as Abraham Van Helsing, and Laurie Townsend as Countess Dracula. Written by Crystal Hyde with assistance from Callie Randall. Edited by Crystal Hyde with assistance from Dave Waldron and Adam Nicely. Music by Matt Fabian. Produced by Crystal Hyde and Ammon Swenson. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Alaska Public Media's Dracula.
And that's all for our show. Thanks to my guest, Ammon Swenson, who also produces this show. Thanks, Ammon. And thank you to my fellow staffers at Alaska Public Media for that fantastic rendition of Dracula. You can find us at the Hometown Alaska page on alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Dave Waldron, and thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.